You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Fast Break Edition podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. Today, what we're going to be looking at is some players who are potentially overvalued, some sell high guys, and some guys who are maybe undervalued, some buy low type of players, by looking at their recent performances across the fantasy basketball landscape and doing a fantasy check in trade deadline style across a number of teams in the league: the Orlando Magic, the Philadelphia 76ers, Phoenix Suns, Portland Trailblazers, and Sacramento Kings in today's show. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Okay, guys, let's take a look at some guys underperforming and overperforming players across the NBA and some guys you might be able to buy low or even sell high on at the moment. Over the last couple of weeks, Bojan Bogdanović of the Indiana Pacers is the 204th ranked player in fantasy leagues. Now, with Victor Oladipo out for the season, I feel pretty good about Bojan being able to increase on that. And part of the reason he's down so low is he's shooting an uncharacteristic 38% from the line. Sorry, not from the line. He's 92 from the line. He's 38% from the field and under 30% from three. This is a guy who's been knocking in 40% of his threes consistently. The positive there is the increase in usage and the increase in free throw rate with Oladipo out and that high free throw percentage. And when that field goal percentage and three-point percentage comes back up, he's going to vault back up into top 100 type consideration. So if anyone's really downtrodden on the way that Bojan has performed over the last few games, now could be an opportunity for you to strike it and buy low on him. The next guy I want to talk about...
Nice, Gary!
He hasn't really been very nice, Gary Harris. He's 199th over the last 2 weeks, and he just got slapped with another questionable tag today, a right groin soreness. That is obviously causing a problem. But 199th over the last 2 weeks, people are ready to give up on Harris this season. There's no doubt about that. And that, to me, means that that is absolutely the buy low moment for him. Go and get him. And you, if someone is willing to drop him, you can give your worst player and potentially get Harris back. Now, he's nowhere near where he was last year. 41st ranked player last season, 68th the year before, 102 the year before that. So we're talking this year as being his worst season in the last four. But why is that? Well, for some reason, he can't hit shots. 43% from the field and 32% from three. He's been a 40-plus guy from three the last two seasons. He's been a 54% two-point shooter the last 2 years. He's down at 32 and 50 for three and two-point percentage this season. So the shots just aren't falling. His other numbers, his steal rate, well down. 1.9 per 36 last season, 1.1 this year. The only thing he's really managed to improve this season is his rebound rate, gone from 2.7 to 3.7, which is numbers that were more commensurate with what he'd been doing previously in his career. So the injuries are clearly impacting Harris. That's a real issue, but to me, he is a real buy low guy, because if the shot starts to fall, and again, we've got, I can't add these up the top of my head, so over the last three seasons, roughly 200 games played where he had really strong percentages. This season, 31 games. I will weight myself with the 200-game sample versus a 30-game sample as to him getting corrected. We saw it with Klay Thompson earlier this season that he wasn't going to be a 31% three-point shooter. Then he went 50% from three throughout this month for majority of this month. And I don't think Harris is necessarily going to get back to that level, but there is significant improvement coming with him. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, 197th over the last 2 weeks. The minutes not quite there yet, but 29 a game. And he is shooting poorly too. 37 from the field and 71 from the line. I liked him as a sleeper this season. He's been a little bit disappointing with his shooting and with that ankle injury, which cost him a ton of time across the December-January period. If anyone had hopes of him being that guy that he was in April last season, that was always unrealistic. But he can be significantly better than he is here. Now, I think he's a little bit overrated as an actual NBA player. And there's been guys step up like Huerter on this team, like Trae Young having this big role, like John Collins becoming an animal. That has limited what Prince can do, but he can be a better shooter than this. The 22% from three is not going to stick. 37 from the line isn't, and he is absolutely worth grabbing if A, someone drops him, or if you want to throw that buy low offer at whoever has him. Number 196, Domantas Sabonis. Really, foul trouble has limited him of late, and he is down this low mainly for that reason. Under 23 minutes a game, 11 and 8. He's never blocking shots. He's never getting steals, and he's obviously not doing at that at the moment. The assists are pretty low, and his free throws, they're not really going in either. 65% from the line over these last six games, and 54% from the field. And while 54% from the field is still pretty good, this is a guy whose value has been based on the fact that he's hitting 61% of his field goals this season, although that has dropped pretty significantly over the last couple of months as it's starting to come back in line. And it was, again, one of those things that we talked about at the start of the season that really never had much of a chance of sticking at that sort of a level. But he's also gone backwards in that area at the moment. And you're probably looking him on the downswing of his value and maybe a chance to reacquire him and get that value back up to somewhat approximate where it was earlier in the season. Maybe not quite that high. Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr., the 152nd ranked player over the last couple of weeks. Only one block a game in 27 minutes. We know the fouls do limit him. He's not rebounding very well. The numbers for him are quite pedestrian at the moment, but I feel pretty strongly that he's going to have a top 50 stretch here at some point to end the season. Well, that's the hope, I guess, that he can get himself back to that level. But it has been somewhat of a struggle for Jackson at the moment. And again, those fouls just never seem to go away with him, unfortunately. If only he could, but some of that is on him, some of that's on Bickerstaff as well, not trusting him to be able to play through it. Number 149, I detailed him quite a bit on yesterday's show, Otto Porter Jr. The shots just aren't going in. That's resulting in two or three fewer minutes per game. It's meaning that he's scoring fewer points because rebound numbers, assist numbers, steal numbers, block numbers, they're all the same as where they've been in the past. What's happening is we're seeing a 4 or 5% true shooting percentage point drops, and that's what's impacting him. It's taking the 2 minutes away, it's taking scoring away, it's taking three-pointers away, it's taking a positive contribution in field goal percentage and free throw percentage away. So that's why he's down just inside the top 150. And when that sort of stuff comes back, which again, like Harris, I'm talking about in a three-year, 200-game type sample for Porter versus 40 games this year, I feel okay about it coming back. It might not come all the way back, but what we're seeing from him at the moment is an increased usage with wall out, and we just need the shots to start to fall. And I do tend to trust an elevated sample size, which again is been happening over the course of this of his career versus the 40s odd games. He's played 38 games so far this season. He's dealt with injuries as well during that time. And it's obviously been a trying time, but to me, that is a real buy low opportunity for a guy that when we're getting to the business end of the head-to-head season, could be really putting up maybe top 60, maybe top 50 type of numbers. De'Aaron Fox is down a little bit at the moment as well, 139th over the last 2 weeks. He's a guy I talked about quite a bit as when he was in that top 20 zone, he was a massive sell high to me. There was so much unsustainability with his field goal percentage, and it's gone back the other direction now. 40% from the field over his last five, 73 from the line, only one steal and down to 6.5 assists with just 15 points. They're numbers that are more in line with what he did in his rookie season, where he was one of the worst players in the NBA. Now, I'm not saying that that's who he is, but I'm also saying that some of the numbers earlier in the season weren't realistic for Fox to be able to keep up, because he just isn't that good of a mid-range shooter that he was showing during that time frame. But with things swinging in the wrong direction, it probably hasn't swung far enough in that wrong direction for people to be completely out on him, but the production of late hasn't been that good. He's still the 39th ranked player this season, but over the last month, he's outside the top 50, and as for now, 140th over the last couple of weeks because those shots haven't been falling with as much regularity. So the sites ESPN, they got their last 15 player ratings. That's where he's going to be dropping down, and that's where maybe we're looking at an opportunity to get him at a bit of a discount. 129 is Jeremy Lamb. I think he's a pretty comfortable top 100-ish sort of guy. He's just not shooting the ball well. The steals aren't there for him either. Only half a steal a game in the last six, 41% from the field. And they're the two things that when they jump back up, then a 30-40 spot rise in the rankings is hard not to see, really. And down at the pointy end of the rankings, Bradley Beal of the Wizards, 31st. Now, he is a guy that is, probably got top 10 upside for this season. He's the 17th ranked guy over the course of the season. But what's happening here is he's a 47% shooter this season over the last six games, 42%, including 33% from three. And when you drop by 5 percentage points in field goal percentage, it takes you from being an average guy in that category to being a significant negative. And then field goal percentage, why that has such a big impact on things is when that drops, not only does that create big negatives, but it takes away your points and it probably takes away your threes as well. So it's impacting three categories as opposed to, like, if your steal rate drops, it impacts one category. If your assist rate drops, it impacts one category. If your field goal percentage drops, it impacts three categories. And that's why that can have such a big impact and why you see guys who fall down the rankings fall down mainly because of big drops in that category. And also guys who jump up the rankings jump up because of big rises in field goal percentage because of its impact across three separate categories. Speaking of those overperforming players, over the last 2 weeks, Al Horford is the 13th ranked player. He's averaging 2.5 blocks and shooting 64% from the field, averaging 18-9. Now, Horford's great. This is unrealistic. It's coming on 20% usage, which is about right. He's not a 64% shooter. He's not a 2.5 blocks per game guy. I think we're all aware of that. Maybe look for the Boston Celtics fan in your league. Maybe look for someone who's really skewed by recent performances, the guys who want to drop someone after one bad game. Inversely, after a good game, they're ready to buy and really bank on Horford being this guy. You might not find it, but it is worth noting that he is not going to be this good. Brook Lopez, the 28th ranked guy over that same time frame, because he's averaging 3.2 blocks. You know what? That's not that much of a stretch for Lopez. 2.7 triples, not that much of a stretch. Spencer Dinwiddie called him the best player that he's ever played with, and that's, did he say best or maybe most skilled, most talented? Whatever he said, he was had pretty high praise for Lopez, but he is averaging 2.1 blocks per season. So this 3.2 block scenario is interesting, but again, why is he so high? Well, he's shooting 57% and 50% from three during that time frame, and 71% from two-point land. So huge elevation, a true shooting of 74%, which is obviously really, really hard to keep up, especially shooting 50% from three on over 5 attempts per game, which is what Lopez has done over the last 6 games. So there's going to be a drop-off. It's probably not going to drop him off, you know, all that far, but he's also not going to be able to maintain this level of production because really nobody can do that. Number 39, The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman. He's averaging 14-6 with a steal and 1.2 blocks, 58% shooting, and 2 threes, including 43% from three. Those numbers, they're not ridiculous for him to be able to keep up. I think that the trade risk with him is real, and where he goes to in a trade, he won't be playing 25 minutes most likely. This is a real hot shooting streak, this 58%, especially. Now, he was able to do that at times when he was in San Antonio. We have to remember, Dedman's been good for a while, 3-4 years at least. That last season in Orlando, the first season in San Antonio where he was underutilized by Popovich, and these 2 seasons in Atlanta, he's been pretty good. But that field goal percentage, since he started taking threes, is not going to stick at that level. 2 threes per game on 43% is probably not going to stick. He is a must-roster guy. He's not a top 40 player, I don't think. Number 54, Marcus Smart, who's been electric. He had a massive game the other day without Kyrie. He's averaging 11-4 with 2 steals on 43-91. So the big red flag there is the 43% from the field, but also the 41% from three, the 2 steals, the 4 assists. There's some, you know, look, Marcus Smart is a must-roster guy. I don't think he's a borderline top 50 player. 64 is Thad Young, averaging 14-8. His steals are low, so there's room for that to improve, but he's at 55-80 from the field and from the line, and those are numbers, especially that free throw percentage for Young, where he's been like a 55% guy at times. Yeah, that is, you know, 20-25% percentage points higher than where it is normally for him, and that has boosted his numbers pretty significantly. And unlike field goal percentage, which does influence 3 categories, free throw percentage increases or influences 2 categories, points and free throw percentage. So when that drops off, if he goes back to being a lower guy there, it's going to impact his points. Not that much, because he's only taking 1 free throw a game. But instead of getting, you know, 0.8 points per game, he could be getting 0.5 points per game. And that's enough to make a difference in both of those categories to have an impact there for Thad Young. Number 65, Brandon Ingram. This, to me, is the biggest sell-high moment, especially after yesterday's game. He's averaging 20 points per game, almost 5 assists. And you can say, well, Josh, if he goes to another team, he's going to have the ball in his hands. And that's true. But I feel pretty good about saying he's not going to be a 59% shooter, which is including 61% on twos. He's shooting 38% on threes on almost no attempts. But that field goal percentage is not a realistic number for Ingram to be able to keep up. That's going to impact so much of what he does. Steals and blocks are low. He just won't be this guy. And on the back of yesterday's performance, trade rumors swirling. It is the perfect time to try and offload Brandon Ingram if you can get that sort of value back. The last guy I want to talk about is Willie Cauley-Stein of the Sacramento Kings, shooting 66% from the field over his last six games, 10-8, not blocking any shots at all, which is obviously really disappointing for a big man to just not block anything. His shot blocking this season has been disastrous, 31 block shots only this year. But what's happening here, he is at 66 from the field. He's at 53 for the season. So we're seeing a big spike. In fact, he's had a 13 percentage point true shooting spike over the last 2 weeks versus what he's done over the course of the season. The Kings have been whispered to be in the mix for other centers. Maybe it's Enes Kanter. I don't believe they're fully sold on Willie Cauley-Stein, as they shouldn't be, because he's not that good. And there's a real chance that the minutes could fall down here for Cauley-Stein. But one thing I feel good about is that field goal percentage is not going to stick at that level, and that's going to cause a 20, 30, 40, 50 spot tumble in his ranking numbers. All right, guys, let's have a look at the Orlando Magic now, doing a quick fantasy check-in on them, focused a little bit around the trade deadline. Of course, the big name that people always want to talk about with the Magic and trades is Nikola Vucevic of the Magic, their center, who's putting up huge numbers, really, really killing it this year and been a massive return on investment from drafts. I do not see Vucevic getting traded this season. He's on a great contract. I think the Magic are still in the thought process. They're going to push for the playoffs. I think that he's got an opportunity to be re-signed at a reasonable enough rate next year. I just don't see this team being proactive in dealing him away. They've made a lot of mistakes in the past in trading away players. Victor Oladipo, Tobias Harris. I just don't see them moving on. And even though if it is the right thing for them to do, what sort of value are they getting back for 2 months of Vucevic? Like, who is giving up this great value return package for him? Who needs him, and who is giving up this return? Now, if he does get dealt, it's almost a definite that his production is going to drop off. I don't see him going to a team where he's playing 30 minutes a night and being their best player. What team is investing in him, getting him at the trade deadline for that sort of, for whatever cost that's going to make it worthwhile for Orlando that's then going to play him 30 minutes? I don't see that. So that's a real risk for his value. But also just don't see the team that is going to want to pony up significant assets for Vooch. The guy I think is most likely to get dealt on this team is Terrence Ross as part of a package, whether that's alongside John Simmons. I could totally see that, to try and get themselves a point guard. That would be something they should be looking into doing. Now, Ross is putting up good numbers, and he is a fringe 12-team sort of guy who's providing three-pointers. He's scoring at a pretty decent clip. He gets steals at a decent level as well. The free throw percentage is really nice. Him going to another team probably does lessen that value. And I think he is probably the most likely guy to get dealt in this scenario. We'd want to watch to see what happens with who comes back, but surely they're looking to get their hands on a point guard. Maybe someone like Chris Dunn. Maybe Chicago looks to move on from him. Maybe I'm just obsessed with Chris Dunn. Frank Ntilikina, Dennis Smith, other names of young point guards. Alonzo Ball, maybe they get three-way involved in that if Anthony Davis ends up going to the Lakers. There's a real opportunity for someone to come in and put up massive top 100, top 70, top 50 type point guard value in Orlando if a trade does go down. I don't see Vucevic getting moved from this team. I can see Terrence Ross and John Simmons, who realistically he's not good. I wouldn't be stashing him in the hope for a trade. Losing two wings like that does open up minutes. You've got Melvin Frazier, who's really been a disaster this season, and you've got Wesawundu, who I think's been fairly solid in his role, and he could elevate himself up to be not a 12-team league guy, but maybe a 16-team league player if he was forced into a larger role. But it also would do stuff for Jonathan Isaac. Now, Isaac could be included in any sort of trade if you're looking for a bigger piece, because he is a really strong prospect and I do like him. But if he was to push into 31 minutes a night regularly, Isaac would be a must-roster guy, especially when you're searching for those defensive numbers, because we know that he can provide those relatively regularly. All right, guys, let's take a look at the Philadelphia 76ers now. Fantasy check-in time with them. Looking at the trade deadline, they're a team that probably does need to make some sort of a deal, whether that's to get another shooter on this team, another power forward, because Wilson Chandler doesn't really cut it to me. They're looking to get a guy in there, or just looking to help solidify this bench, who has been strengthened, I guess, with the recent addition of Corey Brewer, the solid play of Landry Shamet and Jonah Bolden, two rookies who have outperformed expectations. But there's still room there. I think TJ McConnell is probably the most likely player to get dealt here. It won't be Embiid, it won't be Simmons, it won't be Butler, it won't be Redick. I feel pretty confident about that. I don't think Shamet's going anywhere. Markel Fultz, of course, a name that I think they would love to trade, but there's just absolutely no value for him at this point. What do they do? Just give him away for a second round pick? At this point, I think you got to hold on. I don't think he's going to play for the Sixers again this season, but I think you just have to hold on to him at this point and wait for him to get healthy. I don't think they're going to be able to move him. Furkan Korkmaz has got a nice salary. He's expiring, which is a little bit frustrating considering how well he's playing. But he's another guy that could be in the mix to be moved. But is there any real value potential here on this team? Well, there is, depending on what they do at power forward with Wilson Chandler. Chandler's a guy who'd need about 82 minutes a game to be an effective fantasy player. And of course, he's not going to get that, especially surrounded by General Saunders, Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons. So what sort of a player could come in there at power forward and provide that sort of value? They need to be a bit more of a shot blocker. They need to be efficient, and they need to be able to hit some threes. Now, Chandler's doing okay in the shooting threes part, but he doesn't really do enough in those other areas. So that's the sort of player that we'd need to look at for them to upgrade that position. McConnell's been a solid enough asset this season. We did see with Jimmy Butler playing point guard last game a little bit of a reduction in his numbers and any other team that he goes to. Unless, I guess, if he went to a really point guard needy team, maybe he could go to Phoenix and play alongside Devin Booker. That would work for him, and those assists and steals would be really, really interesting, although I don't know if they'd want to do that over, say, someone like D'Anthony Melton, who is basically TJ McConnell, but better. Although we do know that the Phoenix Suns enjoy getting people from that went to college in Arizona, and that would fit the TJ McConnell bill pretty nicely as he went to Arizona there as well, and Robert Sarver would be all over that. So overall, when looking at this team trade deadline-wise, I don't think there's anyone who's losing value who's a 12-team league guy. Those top four 12-team league guys, Embiid, Butler, Simmons, and Redick, they're not really going anywhere. No one's coming in who's really going to challenge them or change much of their value. It's more on the periphery, and there is an opportunity there for them to have a fifth top 150 guy in that power forward slot, much like Dario Saric was before he got traded, an opportunity for someone like that to come in and be that guy who can provide that value, because at the moment Chandler's obviously not cutting it. So he is in the mix to be moved. Korkmaz, maybe Mike Muscala. None of those guys look massively like they'd be great options on other teams. The one we'd want to look at is McConnell found himself in a larger role because his assists and steals are valuable. But apart from that, I don't think there's massive amounts happening with this Sixers team that's going to have an impact on deadline day. All right, guys, let's take a look at the Phoenix Suns. Quick check-in on them, trade deadline stuff. I don't imagine the Suns are going to be all that active in trade talks. They've made the trade already this season, getting Kelly Oubre in. Of course, they would love a point guard. What that entails or how they can get their hands on that, Lonzo Ball, Dennis Smith, although they've refuted reports that they're interested in Smith. If either of those guys ended up in Phoenix, then they would be pretty comfortable top 75 type of players, perhaps. Maybe Smith, that's a little bit of a stretch. Ball could very, very comfortably be a top 40 guy if he actually ever gets healthy and goes to Phoenix. So they're probably the ones to watch out for there. The guys who I think could be on the way out in that scenario, TJ Warren could be someone that they look to capitalize on moving on from, who has had a real renaissance this season, or resurgence as a three-point shooter, but I don't believe he's necessarily a massive part of their future. You're running that Jackson, Warren, Bridges, triumvirate, and Oubre at the 2, 3, and 4 probably is superior to having Warren out there, or getting someone maybe a little bit bigger to play at that power forward position. I could see TJ being moved pretty comfortably. Troy Daniels, another guy who could be moved off this team as part of a deal. They'd love to get themselves out of Ryan Anderson. They're going to cut him at the end of the season, but if anyone wants Ryan Anderson, then he's available as well. He's not going to have an impact anywhere he goes, so don't get overly excited about that. But there is a situation there with Kokoschkov clearly not having full faith in Melton or Okobo. He's relying on 30 minutes of Jamal Crawford, which happened last game. So that's not an ideal scenario at that point guard spot. So there is an opportunity there. And I think that TJ Warren would be the most likely of these players to move. I think they should consider looking to move on from Josh Jackson. I don't fully believe in him as an NBA player, but that would all depend on the sort of player that you can get back in that sort of a discussion. They're not going to be trading away draft picks, of course, because they're going to have another top three, top four type of draft pick coming this season. You don't want to move on from that unless you're getting a genuine stud Anthony Davis type player back in return. And I don't think that's going to be a realistic scenario. But there is an opportunity here for the Suns to make a move. I'm not confident they will. They've had so long to be trying to get a point guard and haven't been able to be successful in that mold. But there are a couple who are coming up as being available. And I could see some sort of moves happening. But Warren and Jackson would be the two players who I'm most thinking that they'd be more comfortable trading. Maybe Suns fans are going to disagree with that. That's just the way that I see it with this Phoenix team. Fantasy check-in time now for the Portland Trailblazers. A bit of a focus on the trade deadline. I don't really see the Blazers being overly active. They'd love a power forward, I think. I've heard names like Nikola Mirotic be mentioned for this squad. If they could get him from the Pelicans, if they undergo some sort of wholesale sell type mode, he would be excellent on this team and he would have tremendous value. That would mean getting rid of someone like the Chief Al-Farouq Aminu or Mo Harkless. Now, Aminu is solid enough as a 12-team league guy. I think him going to any other squad might really limit what he could do, although returning to the Pelicans might keep his value similar, but it all depends on what happens with Davis and with Julius Randle there. So I think he's got a risk of losing value. If they want to really swing big, someone like CJ McCollum could be moved. I really do doubt that, but I think anywhere that CJ does go, if they did move on from him, I think that there is a massive likelihood that he would get worse in that scenario. Unless they wanted to run him as a point guard, that is a possibility. I see that as being a much lower possibility of happening than, say, an Aminu or Harkless deal. They'd love to get themselves off of Myers Leonard in Portland, but who's taking him back? Although Leonard has been much improved this season, really been strong stuff from him. Nurkic isn't going anywhere. Lillard isn't going anywhere on this team. Yeah, you got the guys on the peripheries, Gary Trent and Anthony Simons. We just haven't seen anything from them because this team, A, refuses to use the G League and there's not enough spots in their rotation. So these guys just sit around twiddling their thumbs for the majority of the time. Seth Curry has been strong on this team as well, but they really do need, I believe, his three-point shooting in that bench unit. I don't think he's going anywhere. Jake Layman's been somewhat of a revelation at times, but he does go quiet relatively often. So I don't really see big mix-ups here, although there is that gaping hole, I believe, at power forward. And even at small forward, their forward positions, there is a huge opportunity there for someone to come in. And both those guys, Aminu and Harkless, are back-end 12-team league guys. Harkless more of a 14-team league guy. But someone who was actually good that came into that spot, there is an opportunity for some real fantasy value with that chance there for them, depending on which sort of player they go after in that scenario. But there is an opening in Portland for some fantasy value to appear. Maybe we'll just use that because my thesaurus in my brain isn't working that well. Lastly, let's do a check-in on the Sacramento Kings looking at the trade deadline. This is a team with a lot of cap space, a lot of ability to be able to maneuver and make some moves on this team, who has been surprising. In the end, I think they probably do miss out on the playoffs in that Western Conference, but they've been better than I anticipated this season. We've heard them mixed in plenty of rumors, third teams in deals, Enes Kanter deals, which I think is pretty much dead at this point. But there's pretty clear openings on this team. Iman Shumpert starting at small forward, there's an opening. Willie Cauley-Stein at center, I don't fully believe in him. Bielitsa at power forward, he's been strong, but Jaeger's moving the minutes all around there. Bagley, of course, is that guy in the future. So there is opportunities here for this team. Who do they look to move on from? They've got guys like Zach Randolph and Kostas Koufos who are large enough salaries for matching purposes that could help in getting someone else in. There is those minutes opportunities at small forward. There's a huge chance at small forward. They've got guys like Justin Jackson who don't provide much for them that there could be another team might be destined to think that he could be a solid enough option, which he probably isn't. You've got guys like Cauley-Stein again, who's about to hit restricted free agency, and I'm not sure he's really worth the contract he thinks he's going to be worth. So there is a few options here in Sacramento in terms of deals. Bogdanović and Fox and Hield, they're not going anywhere. Bagley's not going anywhere. But everyone else, I think, is absolutely, or maybe Giles, but everyone else is pretty much open to be dealt on this squad with some real opportunities there at that center position. If they want to get in the market, maybe for Nikola Vucevic of the Orlando Magic, this is one team where if the Magic do decide to trade him, he could actually come in and fit and provide similar value, maybe not exactly the same, but similar value to what he was doing in Orlando. It's not enough, though, to push them into the playoffs, I don't believe, and therefore probably be a waste of some of their assets to do that. And the Magic aren't going to be looking to take back Zach Randolph and Kostas Koufos as the entire payment for dealing Vucevic to the Sacramento Kings. So while there is opportunity and they've got that ability to take on money with their cap for this season, with their cap space, I don't think that they're going to be looking to do that. They still think that they are competitive, but they still think that they're in a chance for the playoff boost. So they're not going to be really in asset accumulation mode, most likely, meaning I would guess that they stay put or maybe make a move on the fringes. Nothing that's going to have a significant impact on this squad overall for their fantasy value. And that'll do it for another Locked On Fantasy Basketball Fast Break Edition podcast. Go follow me on Twitter at redrock_beeble and use the new Basketball Monster Alert Twitter account at BBM Alerts. You got to go over there, request a follow, and then there's a link in the bio. It takes you to the Basketball Monster page. Make sure you're signed in. Down the bottom of that page, there's an area for you to enter your Twitter handle. Now, don't use the @ on that Basketball Monster page. Just type in your Twitter name, and then once we get that, we'll match it up and we'll approve your request to follow so members get that breaking news. We've got other things we're looking at with alerts as well. Some pretty exciting stuff coming up in the pipeline on Basketball Monster, which we're still working out and trying to figure out how best to do it. But for now, you can get all of the news, starting decisions, guys off the bench, injury news, all that sort of stuff tweeted out. We set the alerts on that account. But two-step process, go request a follow and then go enter your Twitter details onto that page, which is linked in the BBM Alerts Twitter profile. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.